This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening to all of you, dear listeners, wherever you are.
Good morning, Peter. Let's start in with the news part. What do you have?
You came back from Hannover Messe, exactly. Was it?
I was at the Hannover Messe, and for sure the topic physical AI was a big topic, but I was surprised because you can still claim to doing physical AI just by using a white label NVIDIA product. And that was interesting. And that won't get us anywhere from my point of view. And I was actually a bit shocked by how many startups and even established companies are going down this path. So really, white label NVIDIA, doing some here and some here and some here, and then say this is physical AI. I think that's not the way to go. This is the wrong direction, I would say.
Mm. So I think your point is about hype, right? I mean, the negative hype. I mean, hype is always like, we know we have a new technology and it goes up and comes down and it needs to survive. So there's always a positive thing to the hype. That's why we've been doing this now for eight years. If not, we would have stopped after 4 months. Right?
Exactly.
So this is one. So are you suggesting this is one hype?
No, not only hype. You show your customers something that is not sufficient. There's no benefit for the customer. If he goes to A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you would get the same. And I think that's not the way to go to make business out of AI and physical AI.
So that goes even further, because I saw your post here, and there was discussion about, you know, everybody is now a specialist on, and we always, all of us need to be careful. I mean, it's a general topic. I mean,
right.
You have been, I don't know, before we started, I don't know, maybe 10 years, maybe longer in automation. For me, it's the same. I wasn't born in the industrial automation, but and then other people, young people come as well. And I mean, the best example, but I don't want to move it, that section. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, but just one moment. Mm-hmm. Is like now everything is humanoid. It's the same topic. And then people start talking about industrial robots, and they've kind of never seen, which has been around for 40, 50 years, the KUKAs and all the other wonderful industrial robots, right? Mm-hmm. But you say it's, and that's what you mean to say with the white label. So are you saying working with, for example, NVIDIA in this case, with their platform, or I guess soon with Google and some others, AWS, whatever, you say you need this, I think the word was this moat, right? This moat. What makes you different from all the other ones, even though working with, you know, a platform? I think the platform is about, you don't need 10 years developing the platforms. You can use it, but still you need something more than
use it as a tool, please. Yeah. Use it as a tool and not as a product. Yeah. Use it as a tool. And the second topic, I was very not shocked, but I was very surprised. Many major European players are now delivering or offering APIs for the big LLMs. Mm-hmm. And they really believe that they will make money out of that. So only to provide APIs will not bring us further, really. So believe me, all the big players, automation players, this won't help you. You have to develop own solution when it comes to Gen AI, agentic AI. And only an API will not help you. And the customer is not willing to pay for that. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but isn't that the discussion that we have had for 10, 20, 30 years, as long as IT came into OT? I was looking at the origin of Bose, And I was almost like, I think I mentioned it 2 weeks ago. Sorry. I think it started like, you know, the first microprocessor 74, but ModCon, was that the one, was the first PLC. Mm-hmm. So as long as we, you know, are, it's almost like there's some of you still were there. And like next week, I'm going to be talking to Stephen, who designed one of the GE PLCs, for example. Mm-hmm. So, and when they were doing that for 30, 40 years, they had nothing to do with something called IT. That came as well at some point in time. No. And from the time on that you need to connect both, it has always been the discussion. Do the automation players need to take care of IT themselves, or are they going to connect to IT? Mm-hmm. Are they going to connect to, I just say Microsoft as a word? You mean hundred thousands of potential IT. And you're saying, I hear you say it's the same now. So now it's we have these huge LLM. There's not just five big ones.
Exactly.
And there's 50,000 smaller ones.
Yep.
And the question is, do you need to get involved? How deep do you need to get into the technology yourself? Or similar to what you said before, or use it as a tool? You say you need to get deeper than just...
And you need to
putting the front end.
I think it's difficult for all the big companies, automation companies, to define a business case for that, right? So what is your customer willing to pay? I think he's not willing to pay for API. Is he willing to pay for code generation stuff? Maybe. But he can also have, when you have an API, you can also add Claude there. So for what is he willing to pay at the end? And I don't see there are so many. There are business cases, but I don't see so many business cases there. Maybe because it's a trade fair show. It's an image trade fair show, right? You see some image-driven the stuff there, and you can see, oh, I kind of connect ChatGPT to my machine, blah, blah. But maybe it's because of that, but... In general, I have a bad feeling when it comes to APIs, because now the guys are thinking, okay, the API will help us to handle this AI bus, right? And but this is not the way to go. I think you really need to sit down with your R&D department, with your product manager, with your sales guys, to ask how we can make money out of that. And and this is the way then to go, not only to have an API.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it is still like for all you, whatever, business development, corporate development, product manager, people out there, I think the job in itself hasn't changed, right? It has always been like that. I just mentioned GE, you know, 40, 50 years ago, PLC. It's just another one in Rockwell or Siemens or whatever. It doesn't matter. ModCon, I think, was the first one. And that has been the same for all the industrial robotics that we've had. I think there's like 10 big brands, right? So it's the same thing for the GE Fanuc. In the meantime, for the product manager responsible for the KUKA, it's the same kind of. They have in different classes, they have robots, but you know, still in the end, the customer needs to decide: are they going to go with Fanuc or with KUKA?
Exactly.
And that's I think you're saying that's still the same today, right? So now the point is, if we just say with the robot, doesn't matter, you're going to put an API, an interface in front of, you know, dealing with your robot, and you're saying the total solution, what it delivers to the customer, still needs to have a USP. It needs
absolutely
to be whatever it's going to be. Maybe you want to have the best price performance. That's one.
Exactly.
Maybe it could be like that. Or maybe you're going to have the one that has the biggest payload, you know, can take two cars at one time or whatever. I don't know what it is. It has to be something.
Exactly.
That's what I hear you say, right?
You are automation company A and you have automation company B, and they both offer a code generation API for their PLC or for their stuff. So what is the difference now? What is the difference? Is it a different? It's not, the one is using ChatGPT, the other is using Claude, and the third one is using Gemini. So what is the difference now? The difference, the USP belongs to the LLMs and not to the API. So they won't pay money for that. Your customers won't pay money for that. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And even one step further, again, if we talk about this mode, I finished reading the book that I told about some time ago. So the mode is the water that you build around the castle. So if you have that mode, and that mode is like the USP, right? I mean, I have this mode around my solution. Nobody else can enter it. Now, as soon as then you're going to put a general language interface, it's almost like building a bridge into your castle, right? So you invite whoever it is into your castle by putting that there. So what is the next step going to be for any of the language provider companies? Then maybe the next time, and I'm going to give one or two examples here as well in a moment. It's almost like you build a bridge for companies that have not been a competitor for you today, but they add value to your total solution. But it's not your value. It's the value that third parties deliver, right? So that's already a potential problem there as well. Let me see whatever I'm going to share with you, if what that has been based on. Now, what I see is moving, you know, general AI, I would say, and that specifically industrial AI, is AI from an AI that answers to AI that works. Now, let's talk about one thing, and it is come from Hannover Messe. Siemens unveiled the Eigen Engineering Agent. They call it a colleague for automation engineers. Oh, and then let's think, oh, what does that mean? Colleague? In the past, we had co-pilots. We still have them. Colleague. And then I say working for you. So it's around the same theme, right? Is the person sitting next to you in a plane, co-pilot, and a colleague can be sitting next to you, or in a virtual working diagram, maybe it's a person in your team, or you're the person in that team doing something. So this thing plans, searches, writes, it delivers production-ready engineering solutions. Now, Dr. Roland Busch, he makes a point, CEO of Siemens, and it relates a little bit to what you said before, but he gives a quick physics lesson, and he's explaining where the Eigen comes from, because the Eigen, as the German listeners know, it means like one's own, you know. But the engineers, they know the term best through a concept like eigenvalue. That's one of these things taken out of the German language. And they are properties that remain constant even as everything around them transform. And that's what the Eigen engineering agent wants to be, a steady source of intelligence. So what is this going to do? Agent, hype, theme. Nevertheless, I'm on what I said before. Hype is always positive, negative. I'm a strong believer, and it's one solution here that we see. I'm going to give one, two other ones. What is it going to do? It's going to give a higher productivity to engineers. So is it going to fill empty engineering seats? Is there potential there for everybody in Germany, in Europe, around the world?
Absolutely.
I guess so. If we would say already today, maybe it's difficult for people coming from university in an engineering environment to get this entry-level job, which I'm not certain that is the case in engineering. I heard our how we call our Friedrich Merz in English?
Chancellor.
The Chancellor. Our Chancellor, thank you very much.
Mr. Merkel. Yeah. He was at the booth at Phoenix Contact, and then the CEO of Phoenix Contact said, good morning, Mr. Merkel.
That was another one. There's even people of you from very far away countries from Germany that knows that he's not Mr. Merkel. There was a Mrs. Frau Mrs. Merkel until a couple of years ago.
He was not very happy to hear that. So coming back to the Chancellor.
He was saying, he was actually suggesting young people to consider engineering job. So engineering studies, I believe. Okay, I have a second example. They're MathWorks. They have their MATLAB, Simulink, Polyspace, and now they're adding also their external AI coding agents. So you have a MATLAB agentic
toolkit. It's an API or it's something from scratch?
I don't know. I didn't get into the details. It just says, like, you know, you can now provide curated skills. Okay. There's an MCP. So that's both for MATLAB and also for the Simulink. So Simulink then provides the skills and code for model-based design. Here again, MCP, you know, we talked about MCP many different times. So the same here. And what I see again is this AI moving to the side, or is it moving? It's moving down almost like from just the support. So the co-pilot in the plane that sits next to you, and now it starts doing things for you, is my feeling. And I have one little story. Maybe I shared it before, but I need to share it if so again, because I did the moderation for them at the MATLAB Expo Munich last October. And I asked one of the session attendees, I said, 10 years ago, was Google. They started with machine learning for translation. 10 years later, everybody can make a translation, right? You know, people take their smartphone and go to the other person and they communicate in a complete different. Second thing, since a year, I would say, everybody around the world with access to technology like we have on the notebook smartphone can produce wonderful images, right? Please draw a picture. So then I asked, how long is it going to be until the consumer that has an idea for whatever in their brain, you know, a table, a coffee top, an airplane, can ask an AI, please design and produce the necessary engineering drawings, right?
So MathWorks is entering the B2C market, or what is the...
No. That was me asking that. So yeah, that's not, but I'm going to cut. And that is the final one I'm going to be sharing. It's exactly in this direction. Yeah. No, so I was not suggesting that now, because this is still for the engineer, right? So now the engineer is going to have this agent. I do believe it's a step further, same to the Siemens, to AI doing things for the engineer. But we're still in what I would call, you know, supporting the it's still the engineer in charge.
Okay.
I do have a final one maybe in the same area, if I may. There's Robin Jay. He's a 15-year veteran in industrial software industry. And he says, instead of opening Ansys or Abacus, you don't need to know, they are finite element tools. It's a specific engineering, algorithmic-based approach to designing. And he asks an AI coding assistant to write a finite element solver from scratch. Wow. And then he trained a tiny neural network to replace it. So without going into the details, he has a beam. He does the loads, and then he uses a PIN, a physics-informed neural network. And in the end, he says the story is, it's not about this simple beam that he kind of engineers and calculates and knows that the beam is correct for certain values, load values. He says it's the pipeline. He says AI coding plus a GPU plus the AI IDE, so the integrated development environment. That's the same, I'm not going to say you don't need, but it's the same, he says, as the computer-aided engineering software. So he says AI for engineering isn't coming, it's here, in my works, it's working for you. You
know, great.
That's another example.
Do we have any announcements, Peter?
Any announcement? I have one piece. Yeah, maybe I do. You can share the announcement then before I forget, because I have here Ranjita Umesh.
Okay.
And she recently graduated her master's in artificial intelligence at Technical University of Applied Sciences, Würzburg Schweinfurt. You know that, or
I know
close to you probably.
Yeah, close
and she's actively seeking entry-level internship opportunities AI ML. She has hands-on experience in REC systems, agentic workflows. Look at that
production. If you want AI to produce an API,
you're a nasty person. Now, that depends on the company. The company that I'm now going to say, if you, one of you, dear listeners, are interested in, you know, Ranjita working for you, you know, check her on LinkedIn. I'm not going to call out Ranjita Umesh, or maybe contact me, contact Robert, and we'll bring you into contact with her.
Okay. And with this episode, we want to thank you, our sponsor, your partner, Siemens. This is the last episode with the guys from Siemens. We will have a new partner, I'm very curious, next week with our podcast, new podcast partner. Thanks a lot to all the Siemens guys, especially to Boris, who making this possible. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I can only share you in saying thank you very much to Siemens. We did a couple of podcasts. I think the one
we will
was
do that.
Like two weeks ago. Yeah, but I've always said, like, you know, you and I, we keep this Chinese wall between partnership and content, and I'm still very certain that we did that. But whenever there was good content, we did share the Siemens content as well, as I just happened to do right now because it was a big one. Apart from that, thank you very much. As you said, Boris, and all the other people from Siemens, it was a great time to be working with you.
Perfect. And now we switch to the main part. I did an interview with Ferry from T-Systems, Deutsche Telekom, about their AI factory in Munich and their AI strategy. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Very much looking forward to it. I was just thinking, you and I met each other quickly yesterday here in Munich.
Yeah.
And I said that the beer garden season opened for me as a player of the baritone. Everybody knows that by now. And actually, I did cycle past because the beer garden where we did actually go and play on Sunday afternoon is very close to the place that that you then are have been talking about with Ferry. So I'm very much looking forward to hear the details about.
Perfect, Peter. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much. Don't forget your APIs. And
I'll do my best. Thank you, Robert.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, dear listeners. Have you with us soon again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, everybody, and welcome. My guest today is Ferry. Ferry, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. It's the first episode. I already mentioned 333 episodes, and now the first one with T-Systems Telecom. I'm really looking forward to talk to you. But before we start, please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners.
Okay, thank you, Robert. First of all, my name, Ferry Abolhassan, is what the most people would wonder. Where does it come from? As you hear,
Persian, right?
Yeah, my father comes from Persian. But I'm born in the Saarland, and as you can hear by the accent, I'm from the Saarland. I'm a member of the board of management of Deutsche Telekom and CEO of T-Systems.
Yes.
And my thesis clearly is that artificial intelligence can revolutionize the value creation of entire economy. And what's missing so far was an open, secure, and sovereign infrastructure for industry AI applications, and that probably is what gets us and got us to the table.
Yeah, exactly. We talk about the AI factory in Munich. And now that all the contracts have been signed, tell us a little bit about recent history. The AI factory project hasn't always been easy, or am I wrong?
Let's say, first of all, there was our will. It was our will, and we didn't talk. We simply did, and we made it and built in only 6 months from the idea to the realization. Mm-hmm. This industrial AI cloud in Munich, it's open to industry. Mm-hmm. It's a public sector defense and science, and secure, sovereign, and scalable, so that manufacturer and wider public sector can innovate without compromise. And what does it got? We equipped our AI factory with 10,000 of the newest NVIDIA GPUs of the last generation. So the B200 and B300 will follow, as well as the RTX Pro 6000. And thus, we increased the AI computing power in Germany by around 50% in a very short time. And as you say, most people doubtful that we got that to the table, but we got it through a terrific team of 200 people. Actually, it was from the idea which somewhere was made in November, then even realized in January. We opened then in February. That's cool. But it's more than the computing power of a supercomputer. It has, beside that it can perform 500 quadrillion operations per second and 20 petabytes of storage and all of that, it is more than that, because it's a complete AI stack. But that is something we talk about. But of course, we are proud because a team was driving that in a short time from the idea to the realization. And that shows we can still do things in Germany. And we also made that for Germany.
I have a question. How difficult is it for Deutsche Telekom to calculate an investment like this? Because you invest in hardware, right? So how difficult is it then to scale and to really calculate that there is a business opportunity for Deutsche Telekom?
So first of all, to us, it was quite clear that there is a demand and that there is a request for a mid-sized company and for the industry to have a, let's say, sandbox, or to have an area where they can simply test and try. And therefore, for us, it was simply to do the first step and get something on the table. And of course, there was a bit of a risk. I mean, we talked about 1 billion in terms of invest. But as we see, after a couple of weeks, we opened beginning of February, and now it's beginning of March, we have more or less 50% of our capacity already sold out. It shows that our guessing and our speculation and our read of the demand in the market was right. And so, was it easy? It's never easy if you are going to invest a billion. Also with us, the money just doesn't lie around in the corner. But for us, it was clear. We wanted to do a step. We wanted to invest into Germany.
Okay. Let's assume I'm a mid-sized mechanical engineer company from south of Bavaria. How do I get started with the AI factory, with the industrial AI stack? Especially, what do I need? What kind of contracts, technology, access to the system? How do I start?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, you mentioned already that the typical user would be an industrial customer, but let's step one step backward. Okay. I mean, when the market is talking about large language models, when they talk about AI, I mean, we all have to admit US is strong in conversation AI. For instance, primary models for text and image creation. But the next step was to learn and to use industrial processes and their data. And this is where Germany can get to the top of AI, you know? But only if we become master of our own data again and make it usable. So therefore, the future of our prosperity takes place in digitized factories. That's the first thesis that we believe in. And of course, in automated supply chains and virtual development. Whoever masters industrial AI determines the competitive of the entire economy. So that said, it was clear that we say, okay, there's telecom for connectivity, data center, cybersecurity, and NVIDIA stands for the GPU. And by that, you got also the hardware stack complete. But we then also invite partners such as SAP for their business technology platform, Siemens, SimCenter, but also nowadays, also very recently, ServiceNow on top of that. And we got many other partners such as AI, Agile Robots, Wandelbots, Quantum, Physics, and Perplexity. And thereby, Robert, we have an offer that can now to come after a long introduction, finally, to the answer to your question, you can now offer that in several portions and several ways to the market. You can either give a company in Germany, an industry company, a mid-sized company, or public company, the naked GPU as a service, but you can even more so offer them AI as a service and deliver them a secure, open, and sovereign stack from end to end. And then, for instance, a mid-sized company who doesn't have a full IT department with hundreds of people, it does not know how to get that all started. That's where we help. It does not know where to get, of course, the hardware from. That's where we have the hardware. But it also doesn't know which software, which foundation models, and how to get that data in. So we take them by hand and give really a complete end-to-end solution.
So you as Deutsche Telekom do that, right? I don't need to be a customer already, a Siemens customer or Agile Robots customer. So I can contact you guys and you help me to get into the industrial AI stack, right?
Exactly.
And what do you do with your customers? Can you share a little bit the process?
Yeah. So first of all, it's always best to give some concrete examples. Let's say the very large customers, such as the automotive customers.
Okay.
With them, for instance, we realize projects where they say we want to simulate our fabrics, our production centers, through digital twins. Instead of really investing a lot of time into planning process, why can't we do that with AI? Why can't we do that, for instance, on base of our data and knowledge that we have? And exactly that we do in this AI factory.
Sure.
On the other hand, we have very small customers that, for instance, let's imagine a company mid-sized that produces air condition systems. And they so far didn't have the IT power and capacity to go and learn about predictive maintenance such in a way that they say, we can already hear from the noise that the air condition does with the customer, whether it will break or not in the next hours or days or whatsoever. And collecting those data and feeding then the foundation model in the industrial AI is something worth to them, because then they have a space for their data, for their know-how, for their learning. And the AI that we deliver on the hardware that we deliver makes these data richer and gives them a service back and says, look, this is based on your data, the predictive maintenance projection that we can give. These are two examples. You can also go into the public sector. You can also go into the consumer side. They always look alike. Yes, it's either somebody knows already what he does and then has an own IT department, such as the big companies, then they probably just want to take the newest technology. Or it is that smaller companies say, no, we would like to have somebody give us advice. What we bring to the table, what they all bring to the table, is the data and their knowledge.
I think what you mentioned is very important when it comes to the whole ecosystem of AI, or when it comes to your factory, because you mentioned it's a data platform, right? It's a place for training, and it's a place for inference. Yeah, because when we talk about in our 300 episodes with the industrial guys, they say, okay, we have edge computing, we have embodied AI when it comes to robots, but we need to train the models, right? So do you see it more like a, let's call it, model gym, or is it focusing on training, or is it more inference, inference for the big LLMs? What is your main focus there?
In the beginning, it's a model gym and a training place, of course. But customers like the mid-sized company, they don't have now the capacity to difference between I'm training now, I'm in the gym, and now I'm on the road again, and I'm realizing the real production process. So it depends on whether you have can afford to have two gyms, one for training and one for executing. We can do in Munich both. But from the sheer hardware, you have like race horses there, like these Blackwell ships. These are race horses. These are not normal horses for everything agriculture stuff, so to speak. And therefore, we also have a data center in Munich close by, which is then good with normal CPU for more inference and more execution, so that out of one hand, as Telecom, we can offer both. But if you really put it to the focus, then you say these are racehorses, well-equipped for the model gym, for the training gym, but you can also use it for the execution, or you use our other data center close by Munich then with more normal CPUs than for normal inference.
That's a great idea. When it comes to models, right? You already mentioned large language models. What else do you see? Because when it comes to industrial AI, do not forget the language of the machines, time series or tablet, because there's a different language, right?
Yeah, look, when we talk about large language model, it's not supporting physics AI.
Exactly.
Because that means more large process models or large industry models. So therefore, nobody, and that's the huge advantage that Europe has. That's the huge advantage Germany has. That's the huge advantage that we also want to enter the field with, to say, who is now building capacity? Who is building a stack, and who is gathering data that build up a large industry model? A large industry model is per se something completely different than a large language model, because the
aim is not so large.
Yeah, it is large. It is very large.
But the aim
is not to create a language. Yeah? What are you using ChatGPT for? It's for, it's a language with which you do lectures, or with which you do your presentation. So presentation and lectures are made by languages, by sentences. That's what that AI creates. Now, what we create by industrial AI is processes. From unstructured data to structured data, to really get a machine better, to really create another machine, to produce a machine, to simulate a machine, to quality check a machine. That is not language that checks whether a machine is correct or not, or has a quality issue. It's processes and it's data.
Exactly. It's time series data at the end, right?
Absolutely.
Everything is temporal dependency in the industry field. Everything, when you talk about with the companies, it's always temporal dependency. The whole life is temporal dependency. And we are all focusing on tokenization, right? LLMs, tokenization. So do you see that tokenization is maybe not the main focus, right?
I would not say there is a tokenization on the data for industrial AI as well, but it's a different kind of tokenization. This is tokenization in its inner sense, and I'm a computer sentence, comes from the syntax into semantic translation. So it takes a word and partitions the word in different tokens. That's where this word token comes from, in order then to build through a grammar a sentence out of it, and via the sentence, then more sentence, and then a complete speech, which then makes it language. Now, on the industrial AI, on the industrial cloud, there are similar things. There is, for instance, if you have certain patterns in unstructured data that the AI is learning and concluding, then it also, so to speak, starts from more atomic to more complex, to very complex relationships. And you can call these smaller atomic or modular relationships also tokens. Why do I say that? Because I don't want to now have a theoretical debate. I mean, you came in with large language model as the norm. Large language models was built for language, but it has the same AI, the same foundations, the same computer science and algorithms as an industry AI. It's just applied to different problem. The industrial cloud or the industrial large industrial models are applied to structured, unstructured data of industry process and industry know-how into structured conclusions to, for instance, to a digital twin or a production process modeling, quality checks, et cetera, et cetera.
Perry, at the end, which model or what kind of model are you hoping to get in the factory this year? What is something you would say, oh, this is interesting. We are the first running a model like this, or training a model like this, or do the inference for a model like this?
We hope that for the very large companies, we will be the home where they structure the data for their predictive maintenance, for things like digital twin, for things like quality checks, etc. And for the mid-sized companies, I hope that we get them started in helping AI, supporting them in the day-to-day process. That's very simply put. I come from the customer, from the user manifold. And by doing so, the models in this fabric will start to exist and will start to grow. And then probably in a year or two, we build the first one who has, like a ChatGPT, the first industry model being applied. But I'm pretty sure that's coming out as a result after 1 year.
Everybody's talking about costs when it comes to AI, right? So is the cost of working together with you comparable like the big scalers from the US, or are you cheaper?
Absolutely. Yep. So we are on high level and we make sure that we are not more expensive.
Okay, Ferry, it was a pleasure to talk with you about your idea, your already existing AI factory in Munich. All the best. We keep our fingers crossed. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert.